Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello again. I'm going to hijack this because I need to. Well, I don't need to, but I thought it'd be nice to finish that astrology full moon thing.
Yes, we did half of it.
Last time. So we got round to Scorpio, which was the opposite of Taurus. So the next one comes as Sagittarius, which is December. Mm-hmm. And Sagittarius then goes into Capricorn. And even though Capricorn gets shit done, I love that phrase. It's really interesting because Sagittarius is the build-up to Christmas time, and Sagittarius is all about enthusiasm and philosophy and great partying, great fun and everything. And then Capricorn is about duty as well as getting shit done. So everybody's sort of going, oh, I'm not going to the family for Christmas, I'm going to do this, that and the other. And then the sun goes into Capricorn on the 21st and everybody seems to knuckle down and complains that Christmas wasn't fun because they had to go and do their duty by the family.
So how come Capricorn's then, not now?
That's the Capricorn, because the moon is in the opposing sign to the sun. So I was talking about the sun signs.
It's Capricorn sun sign, which means it's in the Sagittarius moon.
No.
I'm so confused. No. Sorry.
Forget everything I said. Up till now. No, the full moon is always in the opposite side of the sun. So I was talking about the sun signs as we go into winter.
Yeah.
The next one is Sagittarius, which is December.
Yeah.
Most of December. The opposite of that is Gemini. So the full moon in December will be in Gemini.
In Gemini, okay.
And Sagittarius is hail fellow, well met, party, philosophy, great fun, more. And Gemini is fickle. It's the bee going from flower to flower. When it's on that flower, it's totally into that flower.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes to the next flower and the first flower is nothing. So Gemini is very, very changeable and always just engages with what's there right now. And it can be duplicitous. The Gemini moon, full moon, is the one where you have to watch out for deception.
Mm-hmm.
That's the phone.
Yes, yes.
I hit pause until that stops. So when we're in Sagittarius sun, the moon, full moon is in Gemini. So you have to look out for deceit.
Mm-hmm.
But the wonderful thing about Gemini is it's light and it's frothy and it's fun and it's about information. Sagittarius is knowledge and Gemini is information. So a full moon Gemini time is about, it's about being frivolous and about having fun. It's also about checking things, checking that information is correct.
Would it help you check things?
Or yes.
It would help you check
it
things.
It will. Okay. It will. It will help you see the other side of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
That's the wonderful thing about Gemini. It can hold two opinions simultaneously, or 17 opinions.
I know, I'm married to a Gemini.
Fair enough. So the full moon in Sagittarius is just about checking things out and passing on information. And when you've got Sagittarius and Gemini working together, it's a really good way of communicating a very deep philosophy. So that will be that one. Then the Capricorn moon, which starts on the 21st of December, Capricorn sun. The full moon on that is the opposing one, which is Cancer. And Capricorn is the cosmic masculine idea and Cancer is the cosmic feminine idea. Capricorn is the old man or the old crone and Cancer is the mother. So the Christmas full moon, the December going into January one is in Cancer. So that's about nurturing starting off the deep winter.
Nurturing your hangover for all together, your too hangover. Many people.
But the Capricorn starts the deep winter by breaking down structure and the Cancer moon holds the depth of it. So the full moon juice for that would be about nurturance, nurturing of self, hibernation, being the bear going into the cave and holding that deep rest. Then the next one is the Aquarius sun, which is the holding of the winter, the fixed aspect. And the opposite of the Aquarius is Leo. So that's the magnificence of winter. So the full moon in the Aquarian sun times, which is essentially February, would be holding the depth of the fire. The fire, the knowledge that the fire will come back, the knowledge in those last days when it's cold and it's dark and it's wet and it's blah, is holding the energy of the fire, the strength of the sun. And then the following one will be Pisces sun, which is the mutable one. So that's going to be the Virgo full moon, which is the maiden. So that's the beginning of the coming of the spring. So that would be...
So that would be new projects juice.
Yes, but it's mutable. So it's not ready to start a new project. That's the next one. That would be the Aries sun and the Libra moon. So before we go there, so we've got the mutable Pisces, which is all about allowing flow, allowing the flow of the change of the whatever. So where were we? We were... Pisces, Virgo. Yes, it's the maiden. So it's new birth, preparing for the new birth. And then we go into the Aries sun, which is the Libra moon. Libra is about balance, but it's also cardinal. They're both creative. So it's about the balance of the new year. So you do a moon juice for creating balance in your own life. Mm. Libra is not... fluffy. People tend to think Libra is pastel colours and prettiness, but Libra is another cardinal sign, which is all about let's balance it. We can't balance it, it's over.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, scared the dogs there. So that's what new projects for spring?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in my mind is absolutely dancing around, delighting in the fact that therefore, in winter, when the moon is in Cancer, that would be rest juice extraordinaire.
It would actually, Capricorn Cancer, yeah. Yes. So 21st of December to approximately the 21st of January is deep rest time.
And so if you want to make yourself rest juice,
make moon water
and then that's when I take my deep rest, exactly. Yes. That period.
Yes, so take a sip of your moon water every day that month.
Bit of small partying, but...
Okay, then we move to Taurus sun, which is... Aries sun is April.
Mm-hmm.
So Libra, so that's April is when the blossoming starts, cardinal. Then there's the Taurus sun, which is May, which is just the beautiful time, holding of the beauty, the sumptuous sun. Taurus
that
is
presumably
sumptuous.
Has a Scorpio moon.
Has a Scorpio moon, yes. Which is actually about the settling into the strength of the depth. Basically, the Taurus sun will be the reflection of what Scorpio sun did,
mm-hmm.
in the opposite end of the year.
So how going deep, it's growing tall.
So if the roots went deep, that's when the blossom is profound. So the Scorpio moon in the Taurus sun time is reminding you to look around and see what your preparations have given you. This is the flowering of your preparations. So at that point, it's about, if you like, it's about repentance at that point, which is I must do better.
Mm-hmm.
I need to go deeper. So that Scorpio full moon is the deepest, most powerful full moon there is. And it's dark because we're getting right into the light with the Taurus sun. So it's where is the depth? Where is the depth that I need, the strength that I need right now? And then we come back to Cancer, which is a Capricorn moon, which is where we started. So that's that place, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. I feel like there's a book in there somewhere about all the things you could do with all the wondrous, wondrous moon juices and elixirs you could make.
You better write
it,
love.
That. Oh, dearie me, I haven't even finished
the first one yet.
I'm not even near finishing the first one yet, no. But, you know, as I get better at and learn to rest more, there is more of me spare for the writing of words.
And yeah, it does come back to this rest thing, doesn't it? I'm so glad you pulled me up last week about this idea that we haven't got to the seventh day yet. But yes, there's rest, ongoing rest, but the ultimate rest is death, of course.
That's one of the things my stepmother says, or used to say a lot, is something along the lines of, I'll have time to sleep when I'm dead, or I'll have time to rest when I'm dead. And I mean, if ever there was a woman who is a non-stop whirlwind of activity, she is it.
Yeah. Actually, you don't rest when you're dead, but don't tell anyone. You probably get a brief holiday. Then you got your life review. Oh.
Yeah, and you got flying around with Maggie in a blue car in the sky.
Yep. Well, that's the book called Tales of the Blue Panda, just in case anybody's just joined us, which is about an alter ego of mine who's a vicar and flies around healing souls after they're dead.
With alter ego of mine who's a witch.
Yes. Odd that, isn't it?
Odd that, yes.
Right, you wanted to talk about a book.
Oh my goodness. I really want to recommend a book.
I've got it on Amazon, so I'm going to give people the name of it succinctly like a journalist and let you talk. Is that okay?
Go on then,
It's called A Spell in the Forest, Book One, Tongues in Trees, and it's by Roselle Angwin. Roselle, A-N-G-W-I-N. Go, Susie.
A-N-G-W-I-N. Is that how you spell her name? Have
yes.
Oh, yes, of course it is. Yes, I was thinking... No, never mind what I was thinking. It is... just beautiful. It is fresh out. I got my copy. I pre-ordered a copy. She's a woman who I have known not well, but have a great deal of admiration for her writing and just for her being. I did a workshop with her 28, 29 years ago, bloody nearly 30 years ago, and she is wonderful, creative, soulful woman who writes beautifully. And this book is a call back into relationship with earth, with trees, with forest. I think it arrived yesterday morning or something, and I kind of skip wed my way through bits of it and will go back to fully, you know, plunge into its clearly, deeply beautiful depths. But I just wanted to recommend it straight away to anyone who loves beautiful writing, who wants to find ways to reconnect, and who wants to be wowed, frankly, by the breadth of heart, the depth of soul, and the level of scholarship that's gone into this book. And one of the things that I saw, and I, you know, I can only emphasise that I have skip-read this book, but there is this bit where she rewrites the Song of Amagin, so I am a stag of seven times, etc., etc., and basically, certainly to my satisfaction, proves that it is an iteration of the Oum alphabet, in that each of those statements that Amagin makes can be related to a tree as it goes through the year, as you go through the Oum alphabet.
Can you tell us a bit more about that song? Because I don't know it, and I don't suppose everybody does.
I am not really able to quote much of it more than...
But it's called The Song of...
Amagin.
Amagin.
It's a really famous old... Celtic.
Lovely. So we can Google that. Yeah.
You can totally Google that. Yeah. And it's been claimed, I believe, that it is provably at least something like 1600 BC as a piece of writing,
yeah.
I believe. I might be completely wrong about that, actually, but I believe it to be incredibly, incredibly, incredibly old. And she has, made it into, as all of these old writings are, a teaching. They are always a teaching about the wisdom of the trees and the various properties and flavours that they bring as we go through the year.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating. I can't wait to go back to it.
Brilliant.
And I'm, you know, on very little information, I am heartily espousing this book and suggesting that if you are in need of a new book, that would be an amazing one to choose. And I will find out more. In fact, next time I will endeavour to have it with me. Okay. Well, you'll be at mine. It'll be there. And I will read you the poem and what she says about it, because it's amazing. Fascinating.
Thank you. That will be marvellous. And that triggers something in me, because I've talked before about the first temple and the second temple, and how the teaching we get nowadays is all second temple from the Hebrew Testament, which was the patriarchal temple. And the all the way through the prophets, you have all this mourning, the lamenting for the loss of the Queen of Heaven. Mm. And her worship was in the groves, under the almond trees and the olive trees. And the word Ashrata means a grove. That was the name of the goddess. So what we lost with the end of the first temple was this communion with the trees.
Mm.
So it is that old. This was 500-600 years before Jesus was born. And there is a lot of evidence that the beginning of Christianity was trying to return to this communal living, sensible living, living with the land, living in love, in relationship with everything. So we turned away from the trees with the coming of the Second Temple.
Wow.
2,500 years ago.
So just on another quick spout of one of my favourite subjects is if you care for trees and you care for the planet at all, one way in which you can turn that care into not just wishful thinking or good actions, but into actually the planting of trees in the places that matter.
Yeah.
So, for example, reforesting the tropics. Then once again, I most heartily recommend to you that you join Tree Sisters, dear listener, because that is a group of fiercely, fiercely passionate and clear thinking and right thinking, in my opinion, women doing amazing reforesting projects all around the world, and with a kind of aim of reigniting and re-empowering the sacred feminine and masculine in women and men, mm-hmm. to so that we remember our reciprocity, we remember our indivisibility and the ways in which we are interwoven with all of life, whilst facilitating by the gift of maybe 10%, if you're feeling that would be generous by today's standards, I suspect, facilitating through the giving of money to it as a charity, reforesting projects in the tropics, in Pakistan, in various areas in Africa, all over the place, especially of things like mangrove trees, which are fast-growing, brilliant watercourse helpers of, don't flood, etc., and also amazing carbon sequesters. And one of the great things about Tree Sisters is that they're incredibly rigorous about who they give their money to, and who they take money from. So they won't let companies use them for greenwash.
Mm-hmm.
They hold the companies that help, that co-support them, completely accountable.
Mm.
And they won't just dole out money to you if you come along and say, "Ooh, I'm planting trees. Give us a, give us a quid, whatever."
How do you find them?
Just Google them, Tree Sisters. It's become a big charity.
Great.
But although they do have a presence in places like Facebook and Instagram, because they don't approve of Facebook and Instagram, they have their own social network platform, which is called The Nest.
Right.
So much of the beautiful work that they do takes place within this thing called The Nest, which is, I'm not sure if it's their, I don't think it can be their only website, but anyway, I'm sure if you Googled treesisters.org, you would find your way to it.
Sure.
It's okay. Such a good thing.
Yeah. When you arrived this morning to record this, I was saying, do you want a couple of oak trees? Because I'm growing oak seedlings, and I'm doing sort of reverse theft of the land, quietly planting little seed. I don't know how well they'll do. They may be grazed, of course, but it's rather sweet. But I'm running out of places to plant my oak trees.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not. I just need to take a trowel whenever I take the dogs out and say, oh, there's a nice little bit of land.
Nice little spare bit of corner here. Yeah. I'm very chuffed to say that I do the same. And what's more, when the flail has gone by, which is another heartbreaking moment of devastation on the lanes, I take all the leftover hazel rods and sycamore rods, and where the flail has bashed out gaps in the hedge, I push them in.
Oh, because they'll root.
And they grow. Yeah, they'll root. They'll root. And ash, sycamore, the sycamores haven't done so well, but the ash and the hazel and the willow, obviously, have done really, really well. And so, some more life is coming out of that particularly brutal.
Mm.
I mean, it's not. Well, it's death to a lot of nesting birds, potentially. It smashes through there. Or not, well, I don't know, no, not so much the nestlings, but the, I don't know. Anyway, they try not to do it when they're nesting, but it's just a brutal thing to do to trees and hedges.
Yeah, generally. And it's needed so we can get our cars and our farm equipment through to ourselves.
It isn't needed.
No, but that's the justification for it. It's for the human selfishness.
It is, but I mean, what I say by it isn't needed is not that I think that the trees should be allowed to fill up the lanes necessarily with their growth, but you don't have to use a flail.
No.
And a flail is especially brutal.
Yeah.
You know, the cutter things have the same outcome in that the cars can pass down the lanes, but they don't leave split, bashed and broken.
Yeah. It does look like it's been murdered.
Yeah, yes. Well, it has been.
Split
basically.
And, yeah.
Yes, but let's try really hard not to make this the Susie and Maggie complain about the countryside show, because, you know, yes, it's, that's not how it all is at all.
No, but Ian, you were saying, I think it was last time, about taking it higher and just moving to a universe where it doesn't happen. And actually, that's what good quality positive thinking is about, is to visualise it being better, to visualise yourself in a world where it's better, which draws that to you. And you're right, the complaining doesn't help. The amount of emotional blackmail sort of stuff that you do see on social media doesn't help anything. But it's hard to find the energy, but it's what we have to do, which is to see it better, to create it better, to use that divine essence within us to say we are a piece of God, and if I choose that this is better, so it is, so it must be.
It's one of those yes ands, isn't
it? It is a yes
just
and.
On the
you've
one
got
hand,
to highlight it, and then...
Yeah, exactly. You've got to do your complaining as well, but as long as your complaining doesn't turn in just a kind of a self-piteous wail, but more instead as a way of getting clear on what it is you need to do to change it. And so, yes, I'll be going home and writing to the county council when I finished, as well as talking to the farmer chap. Which is, yeah, maybe it'll be a relief to them that someone's complaining about the hedgerows rather than the state of the roads, which I think they get on a fairly daily basis, bless them.
It comes, it brings us back to the system, though, isn't it? The system rules. It's what we do.
The corporation rules, does it not?
Yeah, yeah. It's what we do.
If there's not a profit in it, it shan't be done. Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I've probably said it before, but we have given up on the divine and we do worship mammon.
As a culture.
Yes. You cannot you cannot worship God and mammon. You can't.
No. But I heard a beautiful thing the other day, which was that I was listening to am I allowed to mention rival podcasts? I don't think we rival her, bless her, to Natalie Nahai on the Hive podcast, which is a completely wonderful podcast. Really well worth a listen. And she was talking to a woman whose name I'm afraid I cannot remember in this moment, but she, maybe even both of them, have an MA from Schumacher, or she'd been and done something at Schumacher anyway. And which, for those of you that don't know, is in Dartington in Devon, which is just down the road from here. And she'd been talking to someone else whose name I also can't remember. I think this is where I heard it. Anyway, and they were talking about, oh God, it might have been on some other podcast entirely. Anyway, this is what I do when I'm decorating. Sorry, you know, I'm painting walls and listening to people. And clearly it all becomes a sludge in my brain. Someone on a podcast yesterday said that they'd been talking about growth and they'd really had it redefined for them. This economic growth thing that we all know we need to stop. Mm. And we can't have infinite growth on a finite planet. No. That's become a trite thing to say now, but it doesn't seem to have persuaded us that it is in fact true. Anyway, and this chap had been talking about his son and he said, I want my son to grow. Of course I do. Mm. But when he reaches a certain height, I want him to stop.
Yes.
And then I want him to grow in other ways.
Yes.
And I want him to grow in education, in strength of spirit, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I just thought, oh my God, that's so beautiful.
Yes.
Yes, if only we could get to the place where we have an amount of enough an amount of sufficient.
Yes.
That we realise that, yes, this is enough. This is nice.
Yeah.
I don't need to keep peddling. Mm-hmm. I don't need more, endlessly more. I don't need to throw away my sofa because it's last bloody years or whatever.
Yeah.
It's, which apparently people do.
Good God.
I know. There's an amazing Story of Stuff video that gives the figures. It's mental how many people do literally like chuck away their sofa and their curtains and all their decor. And, you know, here's me going, yippee-doo, I'm redecorating. But I would just like to point out, for the second time in 17 years, and, you know, I don't think that's terrible. And all I'm doing is a coat of paint. We've still got the same sofa. Anyway, I digress. Yes, that we could... That if we could get to the place where we think, okay, I've got enough stuff and I've got enough clothes, and which clearly the majority we do.
Yes.
We do have enough.
Speaking as to white middle class, white privileged women in Britain, we're talking to an awful lot of women like us and we do have enough.
Yeah.
Yes, of course there are many who don't have enough.
Yeah. But that's part of the point, is it those of us who... sit back and say, I have enough.
Yeah.
Stopped.
Yes.
Imagine what we could do with that, maybe just that 10% of enough that we don't necessarily need.
Yeah.
Imagine all the good we could do in terms of what we're not consuming, the places we're not driving to or taking a plane to, the things we're not buying and then throwing away, etc., etc., etc. And then if included in our enough was a little bit extra to give to Tree Sisters or to, you know, paying it forward for some person who lives on the street to get hot food, etc., etc. Or, you know, fucking hell, to do what, I can't remember what country did, whereby they just, at the beginning of lockdown, they gave every single homeless person a tiny home.
Yes, I think it was Norway.
Was that? Was it Norway?
Somewhere like that, one of the Scandinavian countries. Yeah. Yes, a little tiny place to live in. Yes.
I mean, oh my goodness, there are so many ways that we could, just as a whole culture, never mind as white, middle class, middle aged women, spend our money better.
Yeah.
For a better world.
Yeah. Well, not trying to make it all about me, but this last few months, I've been getting my shoes repaired.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lovely cobbler in Okehampton. There's a shop called Kudos, and they send your shoes off to a guy called Stuart, who's in Cornwall, and he's a master workman. I've got this lovely pair of very old cowboy boots, God knows how long they are now, and they went through at the sole as well as the heel, and I took them in, and they sent them off to him. He rang me up. What do you want me to do with these? How you know, do you mind if they're this? They're such beautiful boots. I want to do this to them, but I need your permission to do this to them. And in fact, what he did to them, I didn't like because it was the wrong colour. I thought when he said the colour of wood, I thought he meant the inside of a tree.
Ah.
What he meant was medium dark brown.
Right.
So I actually had to send them back to him. And bless him, he did them again to my request. And I sent him some more money, though he didn't actually ask me for any more money. But he's a craftsman, and I've got boots that are going to see me out.
Yeah.
Because as long as he's alive, they can go back to him to be repaired. And this shirt that I'm wearing today, you probably can see I've darned the sleeves in it. It's going to Sue's in Okehampton because she'll patch them.
Yay.
And I take all these much-loved clothing to this lovely woman, Sue's. S-O-O-Z, you can find her on Facebook, or it's a little shop up at the top end of Okehampton. As you go down the hill to go down to the shops, it's on the left-hand side. It's a draper's. And it's so lovely to have my old loved clothes renewed for me, so I don't need new ones. I'm a tourist, so it works for me.
But I'm just laughing at you. Can't you patch a short?
I could patch them, but it's also nice to prosper her.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
I've darned them, and she'll do a better job than me.
Yeah, fair.
She's taking a lot of my old short shirts and making them short sleeve shirts instead of long sleeve shirts. Well, I can wear them in the summer then. That's great. Thank you very much.
Hilarious. And then you've got an infinite number of patches on the bits she chopped off.
Yes. Yes, I think it's great to prosper other people. I can't cobble, for example. I don't know.
No, totally.
Redo the shoes.
But we don't all have time to patch, so it's great that there's other people out there patching.
Yeah.
personally, that's one of the ways in which I rest, is that I actually love patching my clothes and darning my socks and upcycling whatever comes past the point.
I've been wearing patched jeans for a long time, but eventually the patch wore through as well. And I've got to get another patch for the jeans. But it's nice being older and not minding being a scruffy old what's it. There's that lovely poem, isn't there? When I'm old, I shall wear purple with a red hat. And it does get to that. You don't care.
Yeah.
Though I have to admit, I'm still putting a bra on if I go out for a walk where there's going to be other people instead of letting them all swing loose. Well, not a bra, a sort of Bustenhalter type thing, you know.
Bustenhalter, that's a great word. Isn't it? Where the hell did you find that word?
German.
Okay.
German for bra, halter for the bust.
Bustenhalter. I didn't think the Germans wore bras, but well, there we go. It's another myth busted by the Vicar and the Witch podcast.
But it is interesting, what can you recycle? What can you use again? What can you not... What can you do that doesn't cost the earth?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, recycling is sadly seeming to be exposed as somewhat of a con. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, I watched a lot of the programmes about it this last year.
Yeah.
And that's why occasionally I do burn stuff, with deep apologies to this land, because there are places in the other side of the world where all our rubbish is sent, all our plastic, and it's just burned.
Yeah.
Which is terrible. So if it's going to be burnt anyway, I'd rather do it with an apology and take the responsibility for it.
I guess. But, I mean, I'm always a bit shocked when you say you burn things like that, just because my sense is that your fire won't be hot enough to have any kind of secondary burn, as it were, which means you'll be releasing toxic gases into the air, which you sent it to
the other end of the world.
No, not the other end of the world. The exact same thing would happen there. But if you put it in the bin rather than burning it or recycling it, if it can't be recycled, if it goes into landfill, there's the chance that it'll still be there later for when we discover we have to mine all the plastics that we've buried, which is apparently everyone's predicting that'll be a thing.
Yeah.
But if it goes to an incinerator, they have secondary and third degree burns, which means the majority, I don't think they're still great for the environment, but the majority of the fumes get burned off and I think used for power.
That would be good. Okay, well, I'll have to trust and do that and just put more stuff in the bin then. It just breaks my heart to do that too.
Yeah.
And in a funny kind of way, yes, you're right, it's probably the wrong thing to do, but at least I'm sitting there saying, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, the thing, what it boils down to in the end is that if we had less and used less, we would need to throw away less.
Yes.
And, you know, that is... In the end, that's the bottom line, isn't it? It's so funny. When Marie Kondo became a thing, I laughed. I just thought it was funny that people were doing this whole, I hold it in my hand and if it doesn't spark joy in me, I give it away kind of thing. But now, actually, do you know what? Yeah, let's all go Marie Kondo.
Yeah.
Totally, let's. And let's just find less beautiful. Because... And I guess with a massive, massive rejoinder to that, be more like previous generations where, you know, when my grandmother bought a thing to wear, she would expect to have that thing for the rest of her life.
Yes.
And did. And in fact, when my great-grandmother died, I inherited a trunk full of absolutely exquisite clothes from the 20s, 30s, 40s and 50s, which had been kind of her party dresses.
Yeah.
And they had. They outlasted her. They outlasted my grandmother, her daughter. They will doubtless outlast my mother and may well outlast me.
Yeah. And yet we set an enchantment, particularly on women, that you can't turn up in an event in the same dress twice. It's extraordinary,
isn't
it? Never
heard that one, I must admit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would have been big comments about the Queen started wearing some of her clothes again.
Good on her.
Yeah.
I didn't realise she didn't.
Well, I didn't realise she didn't. I think they're probably, given that she's a tourist like me, they probably are recycled and customed and that sort of thing. But, yeah.
God, bloody Nora. Whew! Okay.
And well, certainly when I was in the media, you were expected to have a cycle of clothes that meant you didn't appear in the same thing in a fortnight.
It's so...
And it was just an enchantment. It's rubbish.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you didn't, oh, she's wearing the same clothes as you wore yesterday. Ooh, she's smelly.
It's mad.
Childish rubbish, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. But I know when I was young, you know, I was desperate to have a pair of platform shoes because everybody else had platform shoes. Did I like my platform shoes? No. Was my mother right when she said, you won't like them, you won't wear them? Yes.
Isn't it awful when it happens? I saw a thing the other day. Apparently, it's a challenge set by a company who makes very simple and very beautiful, I think possibly entirely wool dresses, which is the 100-day challenge. Can you wear that same dress for 100 days? And if you can and you prove it, I believe you get a free dress. And increasing numbers of women are going for this. You know, yes, I can have a belt with it, wear a cardi with it, whatever, I can make it look apparently kind of acceptably different, but wear basically the same dress. And so I read something, and there's somebody's husband very kind of caustically went, what, you mean dressed like a bloke? And I just thought, yes! Why is it okay for men to wear the same suit day after day after day after day after day and nobody thinks they're a dirty, skanky, smelly person? Whereas, you know, I didn't know that we were supposed to change our clothes every single day. But yeah, every few days, there's definitely the expectation that if you haven't seen someone for a week, they'll be wearing...
Yeah. In fact, in my bishop, I talk to him every Wednesday morning at 10. We have a little session because we haven't been able to do seminary because it's an ongoing seminary church, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
You keep on. And quite recently he said, are you going to wear something else eventually? Because I just turned up in my sweatshirt and a scarf. And actually today I'm wearing a different T-shirt and another battered old jacket shirt. Because I spoke to him before you came round today. So even he was sort of saying, are you ever going to wear anything else? And it's just the enchantment.
Well, what's he been wearing that's so groovy?
I haven't noticed because he's a man.
Well then.
There you go.
Absolutely. I suggest you totally call him on that. Firstly, because it's none of his fucking business what you wear. Secondly, because he's actually... If there is one rule for the boys and one for the girls, then he is being sexist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And thirdly, because I bet he's sat there wearing the same bloody clothes every time while he judges you for doing
He's probably sitting there in your knickers. But yes, but you see, it just came from some part of his ego that just registered, this woman's always in the same clothes, doesn't she ever wash? But that's the enchantment.
Mm.
So yes, you do need to call that kind of thing.
Mm.
One does.
Mm.
And one of the good things...
Even
when one's a bishop. One of the good things about having a sort of uniform for comedy, because I always do comedy in a clerical shirt, is I get to wear the same clothes every time.
Yeah.
So our message for you is to wear your clothes more.
Indeed.
Indeed. Yes, you can
wash. And it doesn't mean you can't wash between...
No, it doesn't mean you can't wash between them. It also doesn't mean to say you can't have two identical outfits.
Also, yeah. And let me say that if you take your clothes off and hang them up or like throw them over the back of the chair rather than scrambled heap on the floor, your clothes get a chance to air overnight, which means that you can wear your clothes for significantly longer before they do smell, because in fact, the buying of new clothes pales into insignificance compared to the environmental damage done by how obsessed we are with washing our clothes. And apparently lots of the people who do take off their clothes and swap them for an entirely new set every day will then wash those same clothes.
At least I didn't do that. I just put them back in the wardrobe. Yes, wash them every day. You just don't need to do that. We don't need the microfibers either.
No, exactly.
Stay grubby.
Stay grubby, save the planet.
And there's another worthy thing about getting older is you don't smell as much.
Do you not?
No. Okay. Or maybe I'm just less toxic.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like a kind of, I'm so smug, whatever thing to say, but I've never been a particularly stinky person. It's weird. I don't sweat much. And
No, I was a very stinky, probably Scorpio moon, probably the journalism.
Scorpio sun here.
Yes, moon's
if Scorpio's
are
stinky, then I
no,
should
no,
be
No, moon's
going to
be stinky, suns aren't usually stinky.
Oh, okay.
I was going to finish off with something particularly...
something sensible, for God's sake.
No, it was going to be something funny, but I've forgotten it now. I do apologise, everybody, my funny has gone. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. And if I may say, bless you.
I'm Spectre allowed.
I expect so. See you next week.
Bye.